Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining us this evening. My name is Zach Ryland, and this is the weekly reading of The Messenger. Tonight we'll be diving into the edition printed on Friday, October the 25th. And if you're joining us, it's about 6 o'clock in the evening on October 22nd, or on the Sunday. And if you're catching the re-airing, of course it's early in the morning on October 28th. So thank you guys for tuning in and inviting us into your homes. Got some fun announcements here to get started at the beginning of The Messenger for this week. This is brought to us by Laura Keener, the editor, and it's really about a big party or a big ball. And this is entitled, Seminary Ball Draws Record Crowd, Demonstrating What Seminarians Say, That Covington Diocese Is the Best. Each year, the seminary ball grows as more parishes, schools, and Catholic organizations continue their support of the seminarians studying for the priesthood in the Diocese of Covington. Over 560 people attended on October 18th for this year's seminary ball held at the Northern Kentucky Convention Center in Covington. And again this year, 100% of schools in the Diocese of Covington demonstrated support of seminarians through prayers or contributions to the Seminarian Education Fund. The diocese has 13 men studying at two seminaries. At the Pontifical College in Josephinium in Columbus are Ethan Dierig, Devin Heffernan, Timothy Hillenbrand, William Picar, Zacharias Schoen, and John Tarvin. At St. Vincent Seminary in Latrobe are Deacon Jordan Hainsey, Anthony Anderson, John Bauman, Michael Elmlinger, A.J. Godney, Dale Nieberding, and Joseph Relidge. In addition to its 58 table sponsors, 5 gold patrons, and 15 silver patrons, sponsors of the seminary ball included Al and Esther Kenkel, Ordination Sponsor, Kentucky State Catholic Order of Fosters, and St. Elizabeth Healthcare, Acolyte Sponsors, 4th Street Performance Partners and St. Agnes Parish, Candidacy Sponsors, Knights of Columbus of Northern Kentucky and Sierra Club for Vocations, Northern Kentucky Reception Co-Sponsors. Michael Murray, director and the staff of the Diocese Stewardship and Mission Services Office and the Seminary Ball Committee organized the event. Father Daniel Shoemaker, Vicar General and Assistant Director of Seminarians, was the Master of Ceremonies for the Seminary Ball. He explained that while the 2019 Seminary Ball is the 10th annual ball, the history of the ball extends beyond 10 years. In fact, in 1954, Bishop William Molloy asked the newly founded Diocese Council of Catholic Women to undertake a fundraising effort for the newly established Seminary of St. Pius X in Erlanger. On January 22nd in 1955, at Summit Hills Country Club, the first seminary guild ball was held. The theme was Symphony in Blue, and it was attended by over 200 people. The seminary guild ball continued for 28 years. In 2010, Bishop Foys reinstated a seminary ball not to support a seminary, but to support the education and formation of the diocese seminarians. Father Shoemaker then introduced the seminarians, who performed 2 songs, and the evening's keynote speaker/seminarian, Deacon Jordan Hainsey. Deacon Hainsey became familiar with the Diocese of Covington while he was working as a graphic designer for St. Vincent Seminary. He said that when it came time to discern a vocation to the priesthood, many seminarians would encourage him to consider studying their diocese. He became curious about the Diocese of Covington because its seminarians would boldly declare, "Our diocese is the best." Quote, "Something stirred in me to check it out, to see for myself what made Covington the greatest for these men studying for the priesthood," Deacon Hainsey said. On his first visit to Covington, Deacon Hainsey said that he toured the Cathedral and Mother of God Church and other great churches of the diocese. Quote, "But I had been to Europe and I have seen beautiful churches." He also visited many local landmarks, including Cincinnati's burgeoning Over the Rhine area, the Cincinnati Art Museum, and the quintessentially Kentucky Bourbon Trail. Quote, "But I have been to plenty of places and experienced the culture," he said. But, he admitted, there was something different about the Diocese of Covington. "Part of it is Bishop Roger Foys," he said. "I was incredibly impressed on how welcoming he was, how encouraging he was with me in discerning my call. We're truly very fortunate to have Bishop Foys as our shepherd." Another endearing quality of the diocese, Deacon Dainsey said, "It's its people and their support for priests and seminarians. Quote, I've been bolstered by their prayers and friendship, these authentic signs of support. because Covington truly loves their priests and seminarians. But he said, what really sets the Diocese of Covington apart are things that people sometimes take for granted. It's growth. Quote, we are expanding schools. We're building additions to schools. We're operating a university. There are signs that Catholic education is alive and well in the Diocese of Covington. We are also beautifying churches. We're completing the facade of the cathedral, that great structure that Bishop Mays saw as a great sign and symbol for the people of the diocese. This isn't just decoration. This isn't just adding things to make it more beautiful. It's a sign of this generation, of yours and my faith. We're here and we're staying. Deacon Hainsey thanked attendees for their financial and spiritual support. Quote, Covington's story is about growth. It's about stewardship for the future, and this is the reason we need good priests. Good priests begin with good seminarians that begin with good seminaries. Tonight, I thank you for your support. First, financial, because that's what gets us through and gives us the best education to serve you in the future. But more important than money is your prayers, your zeal, your faith in each of us. That is really what brings laborers to the harvest. Bishop Foyes closed the formal program with his own words of gratitude. We have really good people here who are faithful to the Lord and to his word and to his church. We do have a great diocese, said Bishop Foyes. In the early days of the church, people were added to the roles of followers of Jesus every day because they saw the witness of the faith in the early Christians. It's the same for our day. We bring people to the faith by our witness to the faith. We are blessed in this diocese. Thank you for all you do. Just sounds like a very exciting time, the seminary ball, and of course a new class of those studying in the seminary. Switching over here, this is a story about St. Vincent de Paul. This comes to us from the Messenger staff, and it's Vincentian annual coat drive underway. Share the warmth. St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati have begun collecting new and gently used coats, hats, gloves, mittens, and scarves to distribute to local families in need. The drive runs through January 4th. Quote, a warm coat is something that many of us take for granted. However, not having a coat to protect us from the elements during winter is a harsh reality for many of our neighbors. We're blessed to live in a generous community where our neighbors help each other and do everything we can to make sure no one has to brave the cold without a coat. We appreciate the support for this important effort, said Karen Zengel, executive director of the Society of St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky. There's a particular need for children and plus-size adult coats. Last year, St. Vincent de Paul in Northern Kentucky distributed over 1,900 donated coats to children and adults. This year's goal is to distribute 2,500 coats. To donate, just look for the barrels with the St. Vincent de Paul, Warm 98.5, and WLWT News 5, and Northern Kentucky Tribune Winter Coat Drive stickers throughout Greater Cincinnati. Coats will be collected at over 100 locations, including Gold Star Chili Restaurants, Kemba Credit Union, all of the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store locations in Florence, Erlanger, and Falmouth, and Northern Kentucky Fire Departments in Alexandria, Burlington, Covington, Edgewood, Erlanger, Florence, Fort Thomas, Fort Wright, Hebron, Independence, Point Pleasant, Taylor Mill, and in Union. If you're looking for a complete list of participating drop-off locations, go to the News and Events section online at www.svdpnky.org. That's short for St. Vincent de Paul, Northern Kentucky.org. Distribution of coats to the needy will take place on a couple different dates. First on Friday, November the 1st, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in Falmouth. Then again on Saturday, December 7th, from 9 a.m. to noon, in the Life and Learning Center in Covington and the Cristo Rey Parish in Florence. And then finally, on Saturday, December 14th, from 9 a.m. to noon, at the Newport Primary School in Newport and at the John G. Carlisle Elementary School in Covington. So great event, this annual St. Vincent de Paul Coat Drive. Of course, if you've got some extra items that you're able to part with or able to purchase and donate, that's wonderful. And of course, if you know those in need, please encourage them to reach out on those three dates. We're moving now into an article from the Pro-Life Office of the Diocese of Covington, who, just as a reminder, has a mission statement. The Pro-Life Office of the Roman Catholic Diocese of Covington, guided by our bishop, promotes the sanctity and legal protection of human life from conception to natural death through prayer, pastoral care, public policy, and education. And this comes to us from Father Nicholas Rotman. It's entitled Pro-Life Because Anti-Abortion Is Not Enough. One of the most consistent memories of my childhood, youth, and adulthood has been being involved in the pro-life movement. When we were children, my mother and father took my siblings and me to pray in front of the abortion clinic in Cincinnati. When I first went to the March for Life in Washington, D.C., when I was in high school, but I had already been to the local march at Fountain Square in Cincinnati several times. In college, I was a regular member of the pro-life group that went to the local abortion clinic in Ann Arbor, Michigan. In seminary, I was again involved, and eventually the leader of our pro-life group that prayed and picketed each Saturday in front of an abortion clinic in Columbus, Ohio. For over 40 years now, many people have been involved in prayer and action similar to my own, but we still have legalized abortion in our country. Recently, we've seen in several states in the nation a calculated effort to broaden the power to legally murder defenseless children. Why isn't the pro-life movement having more of an effect after so many years of standing for the truth? The answer to this question, in my opinion, lies in the real meaning of the term pro-life. Being pro-life means something more than being anti-abortion. That distinction became real to me for the first time when, as a teenager, I was standing in a life chain, somewhere between Newport and Cincinnati. As we stood holding signs about life and God's mercy, a young man drove by and yelled out to all of us, "I support abortion." There was no real opportunity to respond as he drove away. In frustration, I turned to my mom and expressed to her that I wish I'd had the presence of mind to yell back at the guy. But to my chagrin, my uncharitable reply earned me a scolding correction from my mother. That's when I realized that being pro-life didn't just mean picketing in front of abortion clinics or voting for people who would work to overturn Roe v. Wade. Being pro-life means loving every human life, from conception to death, whether that person deserves it or not, whether it's an inconvenience or not, and even whether that person himself wants to live or not. Being pro-life is very much like being Christian. We have to both hate sin and love God. Likewise, the pro-lifer has to be anti-abortion, but he or she has to be more than that as well. We have to love life. To use a comparison, I think the pro-life movement is similar to the movement in the 1960s to end racial discrimination and segregation. Racial integration is, for most people, the obviously right thing to do. And yet, look how long it took because of the biased minds and hearts of some people. In fact, it still isn't accomplished in our country, as we are too well aware. As long as there are people who will normalize racial discrimination and injustice against black people or other minorities, the rest of us will always have to fight for what is right. Likewise, as long as there are people who will recast the murder of innocent children into women's rights or reproductive health, we'll always be fighting for life. This is a fight for minds and hearts, which can only be won by love and the witness of loving people who show how much human life means to them. It's not a fad, but a cultural movement that must outlast every fluctuation of interest, politics, laws, and so on if we are to win in the end. Which brings us to today. I would imagine that the majority of us in the Diocese of Covington are anti-abortion. That is, we don't believe abortion is the answer, and is, rather, a sin. But how many of us are truly pro-life? How many of us are passionate about saving those unborn children and willing to do something about it? If you're truly pro-life, then I invite you to get involved. Below are just a few ways you can join area pro-life groups to celebrate life and to help defend and protect those who are most vulnerable, from the beginning of life to its end, and at every point in between. And there's a list here of five items. First, Helpers of God's Precious Infants. This is a Mass and prayer vigil on the 1st, 3rd, and 4th Saturdays, Mass at Holy Name Church on Auburn Avenue at 8 a.m., followed by a rosary prayer walk to Planned Parenthood. For more information, you can contact Paul Kleemeyer at 513-706-9766. The second is Mary's Mantle. This is a Mass and a prayer vigil. It's on the second Saturdays. The Mass is at 8 a.m. at Holy Name Church, followed by a Planned Parenthood vigil. You can contact John Wendelin for more information, and he is at 513-218-1938. The third item is Life's Fifth Quarter, and it's a pro-life challenge to high school and college students, including a Mass and prayer vigil. This is on the fifth Saturday of the month. Mass is at 8 a.m. at Holy Name Church, followed by Rosary Prayer Walk to Planned Parenthood. You can contact Richard Andelina at 513-703-7408 for more information, or you can go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/lifesfifthquarter. The fourth item is Greater Cincinnati Young Adults for Life, and that's a prayer vigil. It's held on Mondays from 6 to 7 p.m. in front of Planned Parenthood on Auburn Avenue. You can email moc.spuorgelgoog@laycg, or you can reach them on Facebook at facebook.com/GCYAL, short for Greater Cincinnati Young Adults for Life. The fifth way that you might get involved is the 40 Days for Life Fall Campaign. This is a prayer campaign, and it continues daily through Sunday until November 3rd. That's from 7 to 8 p.m. in front of Planned Parenthood. There's parking on side streets and at the Holy Name Church. And to sign up for open prayer days or hours, you can visit www.40daysforlife.com/Cincinnati. That's 40 Days for Life with a 40. So just five ways there that you can get involved if you want to be a bit more pro-life this time of year. Just a reminder that Father Nicholas Rotman is the pastor at Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish in Burlington, Kentucky. And just a quote from the Catechism of the Catholic Church to kind of keep top of mind and live by. Every human life, from the moment of conception until death, is sacred because the human person has been willed for its own sake in the image and likeness of the living and holy God. Of course, you can reach out to the pro-life office of the Diocese of Covington if you'd like any more information or to follow up on those other five areas. Moving right along, we're in our commentary section, and the first commentary we have for today is coming from Father Daniel Vogelpohl, and it's called The Impossible Gift. The readings for the 13th Sunday in Ordinary Time on Cycle C are Sirach, chapter 35, verses 12 through 14, and 16 through 18, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 6 through 8, and 16 through 18, and Luke chapter 18, verses 9 through 14. Jesus spoke this parable addressed to those who believed in their own self-righteousness while holding everyone else in contempt. That's how today's gospel reading begins. The listener is forced to make a decision. Am I one of those to whom the parable is addressed, or does Jesus intend it to be heard by those standing around me? My guess is that most of us don't want to think of ourselves as self-righteous. It sounds very akin to being conceited or vain. And that's a quality that we know no one likes. Today's story of the two men going to the temple to pray is meant to help us decide whether or not we're self-righteous. The Pharisee was full of things to tell God. Quote, I give you thanks, O God, that I am not like the rest of men, grasping, crooked, adulterous, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I pay tithes on all I possess. The other man, on the contrary, has only one thing to say. Be merciful to me, a sinner. In his prayer, the tax collector got right to the point. O God, be merciful to me. The Pharisee, on the other hand, was too busy recounting to God all of his personal achievements to be able to ever conclude his prayer. Many of his accomplishments were praiseworthy. He paid tithes on all he possessed. Jewish law required a tithe only on what a person produced. This man's goodness was indeed something that God could be thanked for. However, from the manner in which he compared himself to others, it appears that the Pharisee is suggesting to God that he ought to be rewarded. The reward that God gives to his faithful ones is a deeper share in life, because the Father is all-loving. I believe he would give a greater share of his life and love to the Pharisee, but such a gift was impossible. It was impossible for the same reason that it's impossible to pour more water into a glass that is already full. As humans, we must make a basic decision. We must decide if we'll fill up our lives with ourselves or with God. Will I live or will Christ live in me? If we come to God full of ourselves, boasting of our own accomplishments, then there's no room left for God to enter. The tax collector had experienced his emptiness. He may, in fact, have been wealthier than the Pharisee, but he had experienced his sinfulness and his utter dependence on God's mercy. He knew what he was lacking. His life had a great void into which God could enter. That is why he went home from the temple justified. That's the reason he who humbles himself shall be exalted. On the other hand, we're strongly tempted to be like the Pharisee. It's hard to keep from comparing ourselves to others. Those in the suburbs may look with patronizing glance on the inner city. Those in the housing projects must fight the temptation to judge the dispositions of the wealthy. Teens constantly struggle with the inclination to dismiss as geeks all their peers who think, act, or dress differently from themselves. The very fact that we struggle with these things should be an early warning that we may already be a bit too self-righteous. Like the two men of the parable, we go to the house of God to pray. We go to join our brothers and sisters in the assembly of God's people to celebrate the Eucharist. Sometimes we leave saying, "I didn't get anything out of it." I wonder if that is not more an indictment of ourselves than it is of the celebration. Could it be that we, like the Pharisee, are incapable of receiving the gift because we're already too full of ourselves? Father Daniel Vogelpohl is the pastor of Blessed Sacrament Parish in Fort Mitchell. Moving on now, looking at an article brought to us from Sister Victoria Eisman, and it's called Feast of the Holy Rosary. We recently celebrated the Feast of the Holy Rosary. The feast reminds me of the way I came upon my name as a religious, Sister Victoria. In 1946, I was a nun in our high school senior class play about a Catholic boarding school. How could the director find enough habits to outfit the nuns in the play? Well, the elementary school principal had the answer for me. Her deceased sister, Sister Victoria, had my perfect fit. I returned the habit, but the name stuck. Next, I wanted to know from which title of Mary the name was derived. I found the titles in alphabetical order, and close to the bottom was Our Lady of Victory. As you might guess, the origin of that title would be another blog. After I graduated high school in 1946 and entered St. Walburg Monastery, the postulant phase ended, and it was time for a novitiate year with a new name. We were given the opportunity to write three names in order of our preference. Was I ever excited as my first choice, Sister Victoria, was announced? In preparation for the feast on October 7th, I enjoyed doing a little research on the Holy Rosary. I discovered that the word rosary came from the Latin word rosarium, or crown of roses, or a garland of roses. That brought additional thought for me when I say the rosary. I had known that people in very early times counted prayers on a string of beads. I did not know that the Our Father was the prayer repeated 150 times. In 1214, Our Lady is said to have appeared at St. Dominic, gave him a rosary, and told him to promulgate the rosary for the protection Mary gives the Church in answer to the faithful who pray the rosary. She also told him to substitute the Our Fathers with the Hail Marys, and that adding the meditation on the mysteries would help eradicate a current heresy. While this apparition may be legend, there is adequate historical proof that Dominic and the Dominicans who followed him did as Mary requested. I had no idea that the 150 beads were related to the 150 psalms. Then someone had the idea of separating each set of 10 Hail Marys with an Our Father. In monasteries, it became the custom for the uneducated who could not read to substitute the rosary for selections from the 150 psalms that the educated prayed several times a day. From the 16th to the earliest 20th century, the structure of the rosary remained essentially the same. And in the early 20th century, the Fatima prayer was added to the end of each decade and became very popular. There were no other changes until 2002, when Pope John Paul II instituted the Luminous Mysteries. These were a beautiful addition and brought the Mysteries of the Rosary full circle. Benedictine Sister Victoria Eisman is a professed member of St. Walburg Monastery in Villa Hills, Kentucky. Her reflection is from the community blog, Reflections from the School for the Lord's Service, and you can find that online at stwalburg.blogspot.com. So if you want to dive deeper, you're just looking for some more content from Sister Eisman, I certainly encourage you to head there. We've got a couple other small pieces to cover before we wrap up for the day. I want to turn our attention now to some news on the national and the world stage. This first piece comes to us out of the Vatican City, and it's entitled, Mission is to make disciples for Christ, not for one's group, the Pope says. Every Christian is called to be a missionary, sharing the good news of salvation in Christ and making disciples for him, not for oneself or one's clique of like-minded believers, Pope Francis said. Quote, what instructions does the Lord give us for going forth to others? Only one, and it's very simple. Make disciples. But be careful, his disciples, not our own. The Pope said this on October 20th as he celebrated World Mission Sunday. Dozens of participants from the Synod of Bishops for the Amazon joined the Pope for the Mass in St. Peter's Basilica. Many indigenous wore their native headdresses, had their faces painted, or dressed in traditional clothes. Before reciting the Angelus prayer after Mass, Pope Francis recalled the 100th anniversary of Pope Benedict XV's apostolic letter on mission, entitled Maximum Illud. The letter, Pope Francis said, was motivated by his predecessor's conviction of the need to evangelically relaunch the Church's mission in the world, so that it would be purified of any colonial incrustation and freed from the influences of the expansionist policies of European nations. Today, he said, the letter calls Catholics to overcome the temptation of every self-referential closure and every form of pastoral pessimism in order to open us to the joyful newness of the gospel. Another piece of world news, this comes to us out of Venezuela. Explaining scripture, a Venezuelan priest becomes a social media sensation, from the Caracas in Venezuela. Understanding the Bible can be challenging, but Catholics in Venezuela are becoming more familiar with scripture through the work of a tech-savvy friar. Capuchin Franciscan Father Luis Antonio Salazar is breaking with traditional ways of preaching and bringing the gospel to thousands of cell phone users each week through an Instagram video series called Vivir el Evangelio, or Living the Gospel. In the one-minute videos, the robed priest waves his arms and points his finger to the sky as he discusses key passages of the New Testament with the help of electronic music and special effects. Father Salazar, aged 34, described himself as a Catholic influencer. He started posting videos to Instagram in 2018, and after a 19-year-old member of his parish convinced him it would be a good idea and offered to help with the editing and the special effects. Each video gets thousands of views and hundreds of comments. In a year, Salazar's account, at FLAS 7.0, has grown from 5,000 to more than 120,000 followers. Quote, the motive behind this is to help people understand the gospel, said Father Salazar, who celebrates Sunday Mass at Our Lady of Chinquanera Church, the largest church in Venezuela's capital. That's really exciting. If you've got an Instagram account, I suggest you follow at Floss 7.0 and get a taste of what he's doing every day. That's all the time that we've got for today, so I just want to thank you guys as always for tuning in and welcoming us into your home. This again has been The Messenger from October 25th, and we'll jump in here next week with our first issue in November. So look forward to seeing you then. Hope you have a great rest of your week, and please take care of yourselves. Thank you.